This is episode 29 with Bryna Haynes. Welcome to the Manifest Miracle Show with me, Meg Sylvester. This is a podcast all about spirituality, mindfulness, and our connection to the deeper world realm. Tune in to hear stories all about people who have turned the ordinary into the extraordinary. Gain insight and inspiration to help you live a life that feels divinely guided and on purpose. So come with me and let's manifest miracles. If you are somebody who has ever wanted to write a book, who knows that you have a book or maybe multiple books in you, but you don't know where to start, then I am so excited for you to tune in to today's episode of the Manifest Miracles podcast. I'm talking with Bryna Haynes, who is the founder and CEO of World Changers Media. As a nationally known book strategist, speaker, ghostwriter, and editor, she has helped hundreds of thought leaders, teachers, healers, and enlightened entrepreneurs deliver their messages and radically uplevel their expert status through best-selling, impact-driven books. Titles Bryna also claims in her spare time include self-reinvention savant, kirtan artist, Lego castle designer, dragon tamer, luxury travel hacker, and connoisseur of kick-ass boots. You can learn more about Bryna and her work at worldchangers.media. Bryna and I cover lots of juicy topics about the book writing world, like tips for somebody who wants to write a book but doesn't necessarily know where to start, or how to rein it in if you have like a million bajillion ideas but you don't know how to narrow it down. We also talk about big potential missteps to avoid for newly emerging artists. And she's also educating us on the different publishing routes, like traditional publishing, self-publishing, and more. So if you've ever wanted to write a book, if you are in the process of writing a book, or if it's something that you're just starting to think about, then I highly encourage you to tune in, listen, and learn. Bryna, welcome to Manifest Miracles. I'm so, so happy that you're here. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Yeah, so we're on Zoom and I'm looking at you and your beautiful blonde hair and your beautiful background of a dragon. Tell me about this dragon because it's badass.
Oh my gosh. Yes, this is my amazing world healer dragon.
And, oh, look at that. Yeah.
Yeah, so way back when I was in my early 20s, I always said that when I became successful in my business, one of the most important things that I wanted to do was to commission art and to support artists. And so this dragon is a representation of one of the hermetic dragons, the world healer dragon, and was painted by a good friend of mine named Joanna Reed. And so I know that you guys can't see this dragon being that this is a podcast, but she is absolutely beautiful. And I've been working in my spiritual practice with dragon energy for a while. And it's been really transformational for me to step into this this space where I'm working with that level of power and energy. So having this painting that Joanna actually channeled for me in layers. Yeah, I mean, it's intense. Has been incredible because now I sit at my computer and literally my dragon has my back.
Oh my God, I love it. And as you're talking, I'm getting chills everywhere. So I think maybe I'm being called to work with some dragon energy as well. So this might be a conversation we'll have to have later too.
Oh, 100%, 100%. I mean, people have asked me for years, like, oh, do you have a spirit animal that you work with? I'm like, yeah, I have a dragon.
Right, yeah, just a big old badass dragon.
I mean, apparently, you know, that's not what people expect you to say when you have a spirit animal, but you know,
right.
of having a spirit animal, it doesn't have to already exist on planet Earth.
Right, and it doesn't have to fit other people's expectations.
Exactly. Right. So everyone, pay attention to your dragons because they're there.
Yes. Okay. I always like to start every episode with the same question. What is one of the coolest things that you have ever manifested?
Oh, Oh gosh, what a great question. One of the coolest things I've ever manifested. Well, number one would be my husband. So in 2010, I had come out of a really challenging relationship with someone who really struggled with trauma and addiction. And unfortunately, wasn't ready to do what it took to begin that healing process. And so I was coming out of this very challenging, violent situation. And I, took a few months, and I was lucky enough that I had a little bit of savings, and I flew to London and spent the next like 6 weeks kind of bumming around the UK. I got a car and I just drove wherever I felt like and explored the beautiful wilds of Northwest England. And then when I came back, I decided to get really clear because what I was attracting in my life was not in alignment with what I wanted and what I knew that my soul and my dragons wanted for me. So I sat down and I made a list of all of the qualities that I wanted in my next partner. And I mean, it was two notebook pages, single space bullet points, front to back, like all the things. How much chest hair did he have? What kind of
Oh my
music
God,
did
I love
he play?
it.
Like silly little things. And then all of these big things, right? About how his mind worked and how how he would support me and how our relationship would unfold. And then I closed the journal and I forgot about it because that's what you do. And I was prepared and even excited about being single for like 2 years, 3 years. Like, man, I'm gonna get my shit together. Sorry, can I swear? I have the worst potty mouth. You guys learn this about me. So I closed the notebook and I'm like, yeah, that guy doesn't exist, But just get my thoughts out, have some ideas about what to look for. 2 weeks later, Matthew Haynes, now my husband, reached out to me on Facebook because we have known each other since fifth grade, but we had lost touch after high school. And he reached out and it's like, hey, your birthday came up on my feed. How are you doing? And we ended up having tea that day. And then we had lunch and then we had dinner. And then we got married and had babies.
There
And
you go.
there we
Epic
go.
2 weeks. 2 weeks.
Yes, 2 weeks
Wow.
to the day and on my birthday. And
Oh, amazing.
that was 2011, and our kids are now almost 7 and 4. And he is literally the happiest man in the world. That's what I call him. And it's been an amazing ride. Definitely had its challenges, right? When
Sure, of course.
you're with the person you ask for, you have to grow into the person that can be with who you asked for, right?
Oh, that's so potent.
So it's been very interesting, but that was super cool. And what I do find is that it's that act of deciding and really and putting it down in some concrete way. For me, spoken words are not enough when I'm working with manifestation. It's really about I've got to write them down. I've
There
got
is and
to
like
underline them.
pen to paper, not typing, but like there is something in the physiology of pen to paper or pencil to paper that is the magic.
100%. And so I had actually gotten away from that practice for a little while, but I'm returning to it now, and it is absolutely amazing.
We are the co-creators. We are empowered co-creators if we just step into that and believe it.
Exactly. And one thing I've discovered about being a co-creator is that co-creation and micromanagement are not the same.
Oh my gosh, that's so good. I love that.
I think that the reason that I was able to so powerfully manifest Matthew into my life and how I've been able to manifest since have really been about the letting go of the how. It's like, all right, universe, this is what I want. Like, unapologetically, I'm very clear. This is what I am choosing. But the minute I start to get tied up in the how, I screw it all up. And so, being in partnership with the universe and manifesting in that way is, to me, really a huge process of surrender and also reclaiming my power. Like, hello, queen of the universe here, you know,
right.
I get to decree.
I'm a creator. Right. I have spiritual authority. I can decree.
Exactly.
And I think that is trust. That is faith, you know, and I think growing up going to a Catholic school, faith was defined as just believing in God, but not the process and the unfolding. It was just believe in this one true God, and that is what faith is. But faith, you know, growing in our spirituality, you know, learning that faith is believing in the unfolding and the miracles and our relationship, as you said, our relationship with the universe and our power. So let's talk about books, because I know a lot of my listeners know that they have a book in them, or maybe they've already written a book and they're ready to write their next book, but they know that they have a book in them. They have that trust and faith, but maybe they're getting in the way by trying to fully take care of the how. So maybe this conversation can act as a catalyst to release that dam, you know, that people maybe have blocked this free flow to get that book from their heart out into the world. So what are any tips that you have for someone who wants to write a book, who knows that they have a book in them, but just has no idea where to start?
Yeah. So I think that there's a huge element of power in the decision. And just like we were just talking about, when you decide to have something, all of the support required will show up. Mm-hmm. And what I find is that the support required looks different for each of the authors that I work with, but all of them share the same level of commitment. They have decided that their book is ready to come into the world. They've released all of the nitpicky hows, and they're ready to be in trust that this can be co-created. Mm-hmm. And so, so the way that I work with authors is very fluid and malleable. My programs are really like VIP level programs. Like, you come in with commitment and we'll do whatever it takes to get your book done. So I've had authors, one of my authors who is publishing his book called The Intentional Leader with Bloomsbury, his book is coming out in November. He's dyslexic, has a lot of writing challenges. Mm-hmm. And we were able to work with his book through a combination of writing and interviews. And I have another author, actually I was just on her podcast not too long ago, and she also has some learning challenges related to writing and reading. She's a fantastic speaker, amazing public speaker, a spiritual business intuitive. She has trouble with writing. We wrote her book using, again, a series of interviews and compilations of material that she spoke into being. So when most of us think about getting into this process of constructing something as big and kind of weighty in the world, mm-hmm. as a book, all of these challenges are going to come to the forefront. And it's really the first job as a creator is the decision to say, none of that is big enough to stop me.
Oh.
And once we commit to having the thing that wants to come through us, to allowing this book or whatever it is, this business, this practice, this relationship, whatever it is, when we commit to allowing it to be born through us, and we commit to being the conduits for it, because it already exists somewhere in the quantum realm, it's just coming through into this physical manifestation. When we make that decision, we open a door, and we don't always get to know what and how things are going to move through, but we commit to holding the space. Mm-hmm. And so yeah. I know that not everyone in my industry works this way, but this is how I like to work with my authors. And yes, we have structures. Yes, we have processes. Yes, I have a whole proprietary system for how we structure transformational nonfiction books, because that's my specialty. But none of that gets to be possible or accessible without an author's decision to have their book.
So really interesting. My experience with this, I decided about a year ago that I wanted to write a book, that I knew the book was ready. I believed in myself. I was ready. And well, I guess it was a little, the timing, you know, timing, I don't know. But I didn't know what it was going to be about. I had no idea. I just knew I wanted to write a book. And I had just had a baby and was struggling with body acceptance. And my outlet was sharing. My outlet is always sharing and vulnerability and just letting words pour from my heart and not stream from my head. You know, I've just let these words tumble out. And so I started sharing on social media about my journey with body acceptance. And I endeavored on a journey of body acceptance. And I forgot that I had kind of declared to the universe that I wanted to write a book, you know, because I was in the thick of mom life, you know, nursing and little tiny baby. And then I actually, you know, I just kept sharing. And then I had a book publisher reach out to me, said, "Hey, we're looking for an author to create a journal centered around body acceptance. And we'd like it to be you." And I was just like, what the F, you know, like, how did this happen? And you know, my dad had recently passed, and I knew that he was up there, you know, conspiring, pulling strings. And now, as we're talking, my book is going to be published on sale date for August 31st, 2021. That's and amazing. I had never, you know, when I set out, when I declared to the universe, I'm going to write a book, I didn't know that it was going to happen that way. I had no idea that was going to be the how, you know. I didn't even know that that was a thing, that type of publishing was a thing. I had no idea. And then it just all unfolded in less than a year, in less than 6 months, it happened, you know? And so for anybody out there listening, just at exactly what Bryna said, just set the intention. And as Bryna was saying in her experience with manifesting her husband, you knew you had to get into vibrational alignment with who you had to become in order to be with that partner. And I think it's the same with the book. When you say, you declare to the universe, and then you get into vibrational alignment. In my case, it was sharing vulnerably and just being committed to sharing my journey. And that's what was helping me get into vibrational alignment of being an author, sharing my journey vulnerably. And so you never know. You never know.
You never know. And that shift into vibrational alignment can often be challenging, right?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, when Matthew and I first got together, I mean, that first year, I almost broke up with him like 6 times. I was so mm-hmm. used to dysfunctional relationships mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. relationships where I was an unequal caretaker or walking on eggshells or all those things. It was very hard to be with the type of person, the amazing, loving, stable person I had asked for. It was so weird that I almost ran away from it. Mm-hmm. And what I often see when people say yes to their books is that a lot of things will come up that will require them to step into their thought leadership and own their message and material in ways that they've never been asked to before. So
oh, absolutely.
A transition in their business. It could be a transition in their personal life. I have one author who we actually delayed the start of her book project because she said yes to her book and her marriage fell apart. And it was like, she's like, "Oh yeah, I was expecting something because this always happens when I say yes." Right. And thankfully they repaired things, you know, mm-hmm. thank goodness. And she is, but it was like a huge moment of transition for her and up leveling. And this happens. Mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, had my body just completely shed the baby weight naturally on its own, I would not have endeavored in this body acceptance journey. I wouldn't have learned to, what body positivity even means. I would have just gone about my life like normal, and this whole journey of loving and accepting my body, and also recognizing the patriarchal structures that make us dislike our bodies because they don't fit a certain mold, just all of that. I wouldn't have gone on that journey. So that happened for me, not to me. It happened for me, to, as you said, really step into that role as a thought leader, and to explore, my journey, and to be in the thick of it, and to share potently and vulnerably. So what if somebody has a million ideas? This is me, very multi-passionate person. They have a million ideas, a million, like, oh, we could go this route, or even like one main idea, but then how to even, which road do you take? Which path do you take to write the book? How do you, and I don't want you to give away all your secret sauce, but how, just like one or two tips for somebody listening.
So to me, this actually leads us into a discussion about the difference between an expert and a thought leader. Because an expert has a deep knowledge of a particular subject, often created through long-term study, through maybe traditional channels. If you have a PhD in anything, you're an expert, right?
So this would be like Brené Brown with vulnerability because she has studied and, or, but she's kind of both,
Exactly.
right?
And well, no. So there are probably lots of people who are experts in the aspects of psychology that Brené Brown studies, including vulnerability. There are probably lots of people who are experts in that field. What made Brené Brown a thought leader was that she integrated not only her expertise, but all of these aspects of who she is, and put a new lens on her expertise. That to me is the difference, and that's the up level that we need to make when we are ready to claim our thought leadership. It's not just what we know, because a lot of people know what we know. A lot of people know more than what we know. Like, I consider myself an expert in the field of transformational nonfiction. There are people out there who know 10 times what I know. I'm okay with that. What makes me a thought leader is that I'm bringing to bear all of the aspects of me and all of my unique experience and all of the things that I love and all of the ways that I see the world. And I'm shaping that into a lens through which I view transformational nonfiction. And so I think it's actually a really cool thing for authors to come to the table with a bajillion ideas. My job then becomes to help them sort out which of those ideas truly belong to them and which don't, and how to actually fuse all of those separate viewpoints and experiences and all these things that are integral to who they are, and fuse them into that single lens, which is their thought leadership. Because most of us have had multiple careers. I mean, most of us have had multiple ways that we earn money in the world and express ourselves in the world and teach in the world. I mean, like, if you look at my resume, it's like, holy crap. Like, a little
Same.
bit of everything. I mean,
Same here.
accounting, I taught yoga for a long time. I led Kirtan. Now I have a book publishing company. I was a hairdresser in my first career, right? For 8 years, I was a color educator for Farnese. Like, okay. But what happens is we start to see how each of our experiences led to the next, and we begin to kind of weave that thread, and we learn something from each of them that is totally unique to us. And then when we take all of that and apply it to our expertise, all of a sudden things get really clear and they get really comprehensive. And from there, we can build a thought leadership platform. We can build a signature system. We can build a book.
Beautiful. So obviously you've got lots of experience with writing books. I've got lots of experience leading retreats, which you do too. And I always tell people a retreat is not necessarily your platform to prove how much you know, but rather it's your opportunity to create a sacred container for people to have their own experiences by sharing who you are, you know? And it just listening to you talk about that kind of sounds like writing your book is a little bit of the same thing, unless you're writing from that expert lens. But if you're writing from the thought leader lens.
Well, you know, I think that's true even from an expert lens, because the mistake that I see a lot of people make with books is that they think that because they're trying to fill 200 to 300 pages with material, that they have to fill it with every single thing that's in their head.
Okay, yes. How do we not do that?
Oh gosh, no, please don't do that. I think of teaching like a staircase, right? So your ideal client or reader is on the bottom stair, right? They're ready to ascend into a greater level of knowing or experience with whatever it is that you're trying to teach them. You're standing up on step 10 because you've climbed that staircase and you're standing there like, look, I did this. You can do it too, right? But the job of a book is not to get them up 10 steps. The job of a book is to get them to step 3. Mm. So if you can.
Well, that takes a lot of pressure off.
Oh my God, so much pressure off. Yeah. But if you can get them to step 3, so there are books that endeavor to get people to step 10, right? And sometimes they work and sometimes they really don't. My approach is more, if there is one thing that this book can change forever about the life of the person who picks it up, how do we get them there? Because chances are, within your signature system, to get people from where they started to step 10 where you stand, there's probably 3 or 4 major epiphanies in that process. A book should focus on one. The other thing is, and I learned this the hard way in my own business, is that not everybody who wants to learn what you know wants to be you. What I found earlier in my journey as a book coach and teacher of writing was that not everybody who wants to write a book wants to be a writer. There's a difference between being an author and a writer. And you know what? If you are not interested in spending the next decade learning the nuances of WordCraft, that's fine. Like, that's totally fine. That might not be part of your journey, but it does not mean that you can't be an author. And years ago, when I started teaching about transformational nonfiction, I was coming in with the assumption that people who wanted to learn from me wanted to learn everything that I know. And what that ended up doing was putting more challenges in people's way. So I think too, that it's really important to know what is it that your audience wants and needs from you? Because some of them will follow you all the way to the top of the staircase. Some of them want to know what you know and do what you can do and be able to have that level of mastery. But most people don't need that on their path or in their lives. And so when you remember that, that takes a lot of the pressure out of the book creation process as well.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Totally. Wow. Thank you for that. Is there ever a time when someone should not write a book?
I differ on this from a lot of people in my industry. But I feel very strongly that people who are just starting out in their businesses they don't need to be writing books. And the reason is that when you create a process or system, or you start teaching material that you've learned or you've been certified in, or you're starting to develop your own material, your relationship to that material will inevitably change when you get to the audience. And so there are people and companies out there that will help brand new authors write the book that launches their business. But what I see happening as a result of that is that it might work in the short term, but 2 years later, the book is irrelevant because the material has completely changed. So I prefer to work with people when they have been, they've really tuned into their mission. They know the work that they're doing. That doesn't mean that they won't evolve, but the core of their process and idea is sound. And so we take that and we weave in all of their life experience and their wonderful stories and all of their evidence, and we create the book that is like the next step up on the thought leadership staircase for them. And what this has the effect of doing is creating a book that feels like it carries some weight, because there's it's been proven that these systems really do create change for people. It's not theoretical. Also, they have a better longevity.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh my gosh, if I would have written a book right off the bat. So I actually started my business as a functional medicine health coach. That's what I was doing when I started my own thing. And if I had written a book back then, it would be a little clunky and awkward for me to like promote that book, because it's just, I mean, yes, like I promote and encourage a healthy lifestyle, but it's not what I'm talking about all the time, you know? And then I went into like business, you know, helping like spiritual entrepreneurship coaching, which I got burnt out on that really fast because it, you know, it required a really masculine energy, which I am super feminine energy. And I would have gotten really burnt out, you know, marketing that book and people coming to me for that type of advice, you know? And so thank you for that. I think that also takes the pressure off, you know, to say like, do I feel like I'm in the place where it feels expansive and luscious and juicy, you know, for that I'd want to be talking about this and people coming to me for this, you know, energy? Does that feel good to me? Or does it feel like, oh my God, I would burn out on this really fast because I'm kind of hiding behind a particular mask that I think people want, but it's not fully authentically me yet. So
we really only evolve into that place through the experience of doing
the absolutely work. Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, that's not to say that the book that you wrote as a functional medicine coach wouldn't have had massive value for people, but it also would have been based in ideas that worked in theory, but maybe not so much in real life for you.
Totally.
Right. And so much of the way that we want to teach and the way that our teachings land can only be experienced through experience, right?
Right.
So that's not to say that you cannot have amazing and groundbreaking ideas right out of the gate in your business. But I always encourage people to test them out. Like, how do you want to work with this in the real world? How does this land with your clients? How do we need to talk about this so that it actually connects with your ideal audience? And that is really a huge process of trial and error, no matter how great your idea is. And so once that's over, then you have, you know, some gravity really to your idea. It's not just floating around in the ether. It's really landed here in this dimension on this planet. And now it can grow legs, right? So if someone is working at the beginning stages of their business and they are feeling very called to write a book, to write their story, to, you know, just get their memoir or their information or something that's on their heart out there, I'm not going to discourage anyone from doing that. What I would say is there are lots of easy and low cost ways to just put it out there and see what it does. But for people who come to work with me, because it is a very robust program, it's a substantial investment. Like, I absolutely do not take on clients who aren't going to be able to actually receive the return on investment that they will get by writing a book like the books that I help them write.
And that's so noble of you, because there's a lot of people out there who are like, yeah, let's just like, give me your credit card information and let's go, you know? So it's nice to know. that you are not among those, which I knew that anyway. So,
Okay.
okay, educate us on, there's a couple of different publishing routes that people can take. And I know a lot of people have this like dream of Hay House coming to them and being like, we want to give you a book deal. Here's $1 million, and now just write a book, you know? But there's other ways to do it, right? So tell us about the different routes that you can take for publishing a book.
Absolutely. So I'll share sort of the three main public pathways, and then I'll share some pros and cons of each, right? Because I
Awesome.
think that every book comes to be in a different way. And it's always, for me anyway, it's always about creating the best path for the author. So the first is obviously traditional publishing. That's the Hay House, the Simon and Schuster. And the pros of that is that there still really is a lot of weight attached to being able to secure a traditional publishing deal. There are also really great processes built into the traditional publishing model, from in-house editing to really thorough design mechanisms and copy editing and proofreading. And you're going to end up with the best version of your book, right? The cons are that the traditional publishing model, first of all, places a gatekeeper of marketing between the author and their book. And I truly do not believe that anybody should have to have their art vetted by a marketer before they can release it out into the universe. That's not to say that there isn't discernment around quality that's necessary, because not everything that gets produced is, belongs on a bookstore shelf, like, let's be honest. However, what I'm finding, not so much on the fiction side, but in the realm of self-help, personal development, transformational nonfiction, where I work, is that the gatekeeping is much more about the author's platform than about their ideas. And so if you don't have the right audience size, if your idea isn't broad enough, if you are not speaking to the right demographic, you will not get a traditional publishing deal. Also, publishers tend to think that they're going to basically bank on your audience. So even though there's this perception that you'll get a ton of marketing support if you get a traditional publishing deal, for most new authors, that is not the case. Publishing marketing dollars are spent on authors that they know are going to produce a result. So new authors have a really hard time. You're going to be expected to hire a PR person. You're going to be expected to hire a marketing team, even though you've gotten this traditional publishing deal. There's going to be an investment required to actually get to where you want to be with book sales. Also, one real pet peeve that I have about the traditional publishing model is that it's all based on speculation. So what happens is the publisher decides how many books they think you'll sell. They order this massive print run of, anywhere between 10 and 200,000 books, or whatever it is. About 40% of all books printed go to the trash can.
Oh no.
40%, and that includes bestsellers. It's all guesswork
Wow.
to do these massive print runs to make the cost of printing affordable. 40%, it's incredibly wasteful.
Yeah, wow.
So I'll come back to that in a minute, but the next avenue would be pure self-publishing, right? Now there are no gatekeepers. Anyone can take a Word document and upload it to Kindle and have a book. This is amazing because it's really brought a flood of people into the marketplace who didn't make it past those traditional gatekeepers, many of whom have been very successful and have written amazing books. The sort of downside is, if you have no experience with writing books and you don't know what makes a book work and what doesn't, you can end up publishing something that maybe isn't its best self. And I see this happen a lot with authors that, they'll do the self-publishing thing, or they'll work with a hybrid publisher that doesn't have any quality standards. It's like, if you pay me, I'll publish you. And what they end up publishing ends up damaging their brand and their mission because they don't know what they don't know. It's not their fault, but it ends up being a detriment to their the perception of their potential clients. Like,
and that can actually get rather costly, right? Because you've got to hire an you know, someone to design the cover and print it. You have to pay the printing costs as well, right?
Well,
is that right?
So technically you can do everything yourself. I mean, you can design your book cover in Canva if you really wanted to. You could upload a Word document and have it printed and bound and call it a book. With print on demand, the printing costs themselves are not necessarily high. You can literally print one book at a time. So you can order 10 copies for your author book signing and that's it. So the companies for that are Amazon, KDP, and Ingram. And you know, people do this all the time. They completely manage their own publishing processes and they're able to keep costs really low.
Okay.
What happens a lot in that space is, again, not knowing what they don't know. So if you don't know how to format a book for maximum readability, if you don't know how to edit according to the Chicago Manual of Style, and, you know, on what side of the parentheses does the period go, right? Mm-hmm. It's little things, but they add up to a changed perception of quality on the part of the reader, even if the reader isn't aware of those things. They just know it looks and feels wrong. Right?
Like something's off.
Something's off, right? If your book looks more like a blog post than like something they would pick up at the shelf on the shelf at the airport, there's an awareness there, even if they can't put their finger on it. And that mm-hmm. can very quickly become detrimental to someone's brand and message. So in the middle of those two extremes is fee for service or hybrid publishing, which is actually what my company does. So there's a whole spectrum of services and different price points and different focuses that are in this spectrum. So, you know, it's really about finding the publisher that is the best fit for you. And in this spectrum, basically, is that the services like design, like layout, sometimes editing, are included in a fee. So you pay the publisher to publish your book. But most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time in a hybrid publishing situation, the back end looks much like self-publishing. So the author actually owns 100%, or in some cases, there's a negotiation around rights. But for, you know, a lot of the time, the author will own 100% of the rights still. So they've just basically paid someone to produce their book. Across that spectrum are, you know, publishers that will publish anything as long as you pay them. And then there are publishers who are more discerning and have really high quality standards. And that's kind of where I fall. So all of my processes look like traditional publishing. We have the exact same editorial design proofreading processes as a traditional publisher. Only I don't choose my clients based on their platforms. I choose my clients based on their ideas. And my clients own 100% of their royalties. So we assist with everything through launch, and then they are able to take their book wherever they want to take it. The cool thing about hybrid publishing is that you're working with a print-on-demand system, so there is no massive print run. There are no 40% of books go in the trash.
That's nice.
We are getting to the point where we are also able to make these books available to bookstores. And they're not a guaranteed shoe-in in the way that something maybe from a Hay House or Simon & Schuster is currently. But one of my big goals for World Changers Media is that within the next 24 months, I will build those relationships and we'll be able to do print-on-demand, eco-friendly, author-friendly, and still have, you know, nationwide retail distribution. So all of my authors, their books are accessible to bookstores, and a lot of times bookstores will be ordering them based on customer demand, but I'm looking for that sort of guaranteed placement. We're working.
Yeah. And you've recently had an author she was picked up by Barnes & Noble, right?
Well, so that was the book is called Dipped in It. It's a memoir by a woman, amazing, amazing writer named Bethany Harvey. And I rarely do memoir, actually. But when I saw her manuscript, I was like, oh my gosh, please, please, please let me publish this book. This is so good. She's an incredible writer, and she her book started off as a 365-day gratitude journal after the passing of her father, which really devastated her, and turned into this amazing just journey through the full spectrum of human emotion. So we were getting ready to do a much more traditional launch in that we were going to do the first couple of days on Amazon, get the Amazon ranking, and then open up the field to Barnes and Noble and all of the other sort of, standard booksellers. Amazon had so many issues on their back end that we decided to not even launch on Amazon. It wasn't anything to do with us, it was out of our control. But Bethany felt very strongly that she really wanted to concentrate sales in bookstores anyway, and especially local bookstores and local Barnes and Noble locations.
Beautiful.
So we made the executive decision to launch only on Barnes and Noble and have the book be available for ordering in bookstores. And the result was amazing. So Barnes and Noble actually ended up reaching out to us to figure out how they could get the book into their stores. She ended up rising to number 7 in Barnes and Noble's top 100, which was amazing. So it's not like some back-ass Amazon category where you need to sell 40 books to rise to the top. Like, it's number 7 out of all the books that Barnes and
Oh
Noble
my
sells.
gosh,
And
wow.
it was amazing. I was so thrilled for her. Her community absolutely rallied and made the extra effort to go to the bookstore and place the order and call Barnes and Noble and really support this beautiful work that she had created.
And did she have this giant, massive following and platform?
No. She had a substantial readership on Facebook for her writing. I think her community is—it's under 5,000 though. It's not a huge platform. It's growing because of the
Yeah, of
book.
course.
Yeah, it's growing because of the book. But where she started out, no, she did not have a massive following. She just had a whole bunch of people who loved her and loved her writing and were invested enough to take the extra step to support her during this launch. So it's been absolutely beautiful to watch, but it's also to me, this is the future of where I want to take hybrid publishing, because it is still about producing the books that are the best versions of themselves, right? And what does that look like? And what does that process look like for the authors? And what does that process look like on the back end when it comes to actually selling and distributing the book? And it's been really amazing to just watch her fly with this and knowing that, like, wow, now I get to see what's possible, and we get to
You
sort of build
co-created together.
co-create it together. Exactly.
Yeah, oh, that's so exciting. Congratulations to the both of you. That's really awesome.
Thank you.
What are the signs that someone is definitely ready to write their book?
So, a lot of the authors that I work with are in very good positions in their business. They are leaders or becoming leaders in their industry. They are on fire with their ideas. They feel so connected to their mission. Like, they found the reason that they're here on planet Earth and they are running with it. And when they come to me is when they are looking to do the sort of next big up level. So, for example, I have a client who has a very, very successful coaching business, but his next step is to be speaking at Google. It's to be expanding into a realm simply beyond the coaching space, and his vision is carrying him there. So the book is part of that. It begins to introduce his core ideas to a new audience outside of the coaching space. So that's one example. Another example is someone who has reached expert status in their niche, but really wants to create a thought leadership leadership system that integrates not just what they know about a topic, but all of who they are in their space and make that transition from expert to thought leader. And that's not really based on any level of like business success or platform size. I mean, none of this is. It's really about being ready to step into the next big expansion. And again, you know, making the time and the commitment and the investment really worth it, because what you are creating is going to literally carry them up to the next step on their journey.
Amazing. Yeah. All right. So any potential mistakes? I don't really like the word mistakes, but are there any potential like challenges that someone could avoid? And I think we've kind of covered this in the fact that, hey, if you're not quite ready, then take the pressure off of yourself to write a book, and don't invest a massive amount of money, you know, or time if you're not quite ready. Like everything is going to unfold in divine timing. And I do think, you know, social media almost has kind of like put this pressure on everybody to like, write a book, you know? And like, I think if you're listening to this and you know you want to write a book, honestly, like take the pressure off of yourself to write the book until you feel just super grounded and aligned with your message. But is there anything else? I kind of answered my own question. Sorry about that. But yeah, are there any big no-nos or any big things to avoid? Like, can you help a sister out, you know, help a brother out, anybody that's listening? Like one or two that come to mind of like, yeah.
Yeah. So first of all, let go of the idea that having a book is as important or more important than what's in the book. Because a lot of people that work in my space will say that nobody reads the book anyway. It's just more important that you can hand someone a book and say, I wrote a book. I got to call bullshit on that.
It's not, right. Yeah.
Not okay. And so what ends up happening is people end up writing their book in a weekend, or like, hey, write your book in 30 days. And like, yeah, you know, I can write a book in 30 days. I've been a professional writer for 15 years. And you know what? That first draft is still going to be shit. Like, that's what Hemingway mm-hmm. said, right? The first draft of anything is shit. It's true. Nobody wants mm-hmm. to read your shitty first draft. Sorry about that. So please don't rush the process. Understand yeah. that your writing is an evolutionary journey. It doesn't have to take years, but I usually tell my authors 6 months is a good timeline. If you can produce a quality chapter every other week with help, with guidance, that's a good pace. So please don't rush the process. Second of all, the level of investment and quality needs to be consistent with your goals for the book. If you have a mega successful business and your next step is those high power speaking engagements, it is worldwide leadership, right? Don't try to edit the damn book yourself.
Right.
Just understand what you know and what you don't know and what you and your team are actually capable of, and seek help for filling those gaps. I see this happen all the time, like people who have great ideas and solid businesses, and they compile together a bunch of blog posts and call it a book. And like, that's fine if you're giving it away on your website as a lead magnet, but that's not okay if that's something that you want to see on bookstore shelves. Like, there is a certain level of quality representation of your idea that has to be there in order for people to take your book and you seriously. So, you know, make sure that you're investing the time, asking for the help, getting the support that you need in a way that is on a level with what you want the book to do for you. So again, if you're just starting out and you have this beautiful story that you want to share and you want to just completely self-publish it and put it up on Kindle and just be able to have people read it, awesome. That's perfectly fine. Don't do that if you think this is going to bring your business from 6 to 7 figures, right? So it's really all about having a book where the quality is consistent with the goal and the end result that you're seeking to achieve. And also, the final thing that I would encourage people to remember is that when someone sits down with your book, they are committing to invest 5 to 15 or more hours of their time to be with your material. So what does that mean? A, do not, please do not write a 150-page sales letter. Like, do not have a call to action at the end of every chapter. That is a great tool for other types of marketing. But sorry, guys, books are sacred. Nobody is spending 5 to 15 hours with your Facebook posts. Nobody is investing their time and energy in your Instagram posts at that level, right? So when you ask someone to give that much of themselves to have an experience of your material, do not make it a sales pitch. Have links, have calls to action at the end of the book. You know, go to my resources page and you can get access to this, this, and this. But what I've seen people doing recently is basically turning it into just one long pitch. There's not a lot of usable information. There's not a lot of takeaways. It's just all leading people toward the next purchase. And I'm not okay with that. That is not something that I think should be applied to books. Apply it in every other aspect of your marketing, your videos, your social, like everything. Yes, please sell your stuff, but don't do it in a book. Not that way. Your book is an experience that you're gifting to someone so that they can like, know, and trust you enough to actually buy your stuff. So just be aware of how people are engaging with your book and why it's different than other forms of marketing. And honor the reader, honor their time, honor their energy that they are giving to your idea. And so that kind of brings in everything. Make sure that the idea is properly communicated. Make sure that you hire a really good editor. Make sure that the book is laid out in a way that makes it readable, right? It's like silly little things like margin space make a huge difference in how people absorb information, right? So just be aware that this is the level of commitment that you're asking for, and be willing to rise to that and gift it to your readers.
I love that energy. Your book is a gift. It is a gift, and it's a warm blanket. It's a container. And I know, I mean, when I read a book, it is when I'm in the bathtub, and it is the only time during the day that I have to myself, and it is a sacred time. And I love getting into a boiling hot bath and opening up a book, and just, that's my time. And when I'm connecting with that author, when I'm connecting with that material, I'm connecting because I need something to fill my cup. I am looking for that moment and space and time to nourish me. And so I think for all the potential authors, you know, out there listening, like, think about your sacred time when you read a book, and that you get to create that for somebody else. You know, think of that energy exchange. At least for me, that's the type of books that, you know, I'll be writing. So those warm blanket nourishing books.
we all have those books that changed our lives, right?
Yep, absolutely.
And they changed our lives, not because they expected something from us or they expected anything back from us, but because they gifted us with the knowledge that we needed to take our next steps. And chances are you follow those authors. Chances are you know what those authors are doing. You know, you're like, you're on Joe Dispenza's website looking for that next retreat because you read one of his books, right? You know, that there's that example, like, we don't ever want to hold back in the book creation process. Like, I don't want to give all my stuff away. Like, you can't give it all away. You
know, you're going to keep evolving and growing.
Step three, and then you're inviting them, you know, this is enough to change your life, but if you want to continue, hey, the rest of the staircase is right here.
I love that.
But yeah, it's a huge pet peeve of mine. I actually had a conversation with a friend of mine where she was describing it as like the pornification of nonfiction. Like, you know, it's turning this beautiful, like, sacred exchange into like a fee for service, right?
Like, yeah, I totally feel that. Yeah. And just like you were saying earlier, just get a book out, and it's more important that you have a book than what's in it. And it's this, you know, like, our society, our culture has definitely like moving in that direction, but we as the guardians of the light, you know, like we can do something about that. We can come back to this sacred warm blanket, sacred container, this gift that books are. So,
Yeah, 100%. And I think that when you produce something that is that cohesive, that full of love, that much of a gift to your audience, that energy will be met with reciprocity. Like, it's almost like so many people have lost the ability to trust that people will reciprocate if something is given freely.
Right, like
It's
thank
always
you.
attached, or it's always like a push for the next thing. And believe me, I love sales. I love marketing. I love making money in my business. This is not like an anti-sales discussion at all. It's simply understanding the nature of the medium and being willing to keep a space sacred, even if it means a little bit of uncertainty about how people will reciprocate, right? Because you can guide people to reciprocate or to sign up for your programs or to buy your stuff like so easily without, putting calls to action on every other page of your book.
Right. Simply by sharing your story, people will become connected to your energy, and then they'll want to invest their time and their maybe money, but their time, their energy with you. And you can take them on a sacred, intentional journey. And people are willing to spend their money on that, you know? Well, thank you, Bryna, for educating us and for all of your insight and wisdom around writing and publishing a book. I'm grateful for you and the work that you're doing, because I can feel it, and I felt it from you when we first met in Costa Rica, that you are a noble person. You're doing this for the right reasons. You want to put life-changing quality, words, books out there that support, the humanity. And it's about money. It's a business, but but more so it's about the bigger energy exchange of serving and supporting authors and thought leaders who need the help. And then getting it out there in a way that, they can trust that you're going to do the best job. So thank you. Thank you for
Thank you
everything
so
that you
much.
do. I always like to end by asking my guests, how or what does the word miracle mean to you?
What does the word miracle mean to me? I think it means alignment. I think it means when all those various possibilities and layers of possibility within the quantum field line up and create a portal.
I
That's
love
what
that. I
is
love
like,
that.
yeah,
I
it's
like that visual. Thank you. Thank you.
and dragons,
And yeah, and dragons, duh.
when
I
miracles
mean,
happen.
right, duh, dragons. So we will include all of the links to World Changers Media if you're interested in working with Bryna. As you can see, she's just amazing, very passionate about what she does. Shoot her a message. Go to World Changers Media website, which we'll have a link for that in the show notes, and reach out to her. So I'm excited to see what happens from this episode.
Thank you so much for taking the time today. And thank you everyone for listening and being with us during this conversation. I'm just so grateful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye, Verena.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Manifest Miracles. I hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as I enjoyed recording it. Before you go, I wanted to remind you of the Nurture the Spirit retreat coming up in the magical Texas Hill Country, September 23rd through the 26th. This retreat will be hosted by me and my dear friend and fellow Kundalini yoga teacher, Ankar Ryan. In this immersive and lovely experience, you will be guided to practice many of the techniques that we have talked about here on Manifest Miracles, including Kundalini Yoga, meditation, mindfulness, sound healing, divine feminine, chakra balancing, and much more. We'll also be fueled by beautiful, lovely, yummy vegan food, and you can expect to experience sisterhood in its highest frequency. So check out more in the show notes below. Again, it's the Nurture the Spirit Retreat from September 23rd through the 26th, just outside of Austin, Texas. Love you guys. Hope to see you there. And as always, I will see you in the cosmos.